Well, it's going to be with you guys down here in the podcast studio as we look back on quarter one and just a fairly eventful start to quarter number two. So I am joined here in studio by Zach Reynolds, our Chief Investment Officer, and today both of our analysts, Sam and Austin. So fellas, I really appreciate it. Thank you for joining us. Let's just dive right in. I guess let's spend a quick minute on quarter one since this is our first quarter market update. But Zach, if you don't mind, give us a little debrief on Q1 and then let's really get into just what has been an incredible, eventful first couple weeks of Q2.
Yeah, thanks, Tyler. And normally we spend a lot of time talking about what happened over the quarter, but I think given what's happened over the last couple weeks, we'll be pretty brief. Yeah. So first quarter, S&P 500 was down 4%, so underperformed relative to international stocks, which for us was kind of a welcome development in a lot of ways, because we've been saying for years that U.S. stocks on a relative basis have outperformed and are looking more expensive. We think international diversification still made sense. And through the first quarter of the year, it paid off. International developed markets, which is places like Europe and Australia, were up 6%. Emerging market stocks, think China, India, Brazil, right, places like that, were up 3%. Bonds provided some nice diversification benefit as well. U.S. aggregate index was up about 3% for the first quarter. So the old strategy of I'm going to put all my money in the S&P 500 or the NASDAQ, which performed even worse, did not work well in the first quarter. And that benefited us on a relative basis because we do have greater diversification.
Were we seeing any swing from the international emerging market as far as in the sense of overperformance as the end of the year? Or was it really that Q1 where we kind of saw it?
Yeah, it was really Q1. So if you think about Q4 of last year, a lot of excitement around the Trump victory, right, in the election, and kind of continued what had been the trend in the past of U.S. is going to outperform, continue to do well. In fact, I think a lot of people felt like, I'm not sure anyone believed Trump would follow through with what he's done over the last couple of weeks in terms of tariffs, but I think people, the general consensus was, this is going to be good for the U.S., perhaps at the expense of international companies. And markets have a really funny way of confounding the conventional expectations. And that's what's happened in the first quarter.
Sure. Sam, Austin, any Q1 information or tidbits?
I think the only other thing to add is looking at kind of what you were saying, going from the election to Inauguration Day, there was certain asset classes or certain investments you could have made that were deemed kind of the Trump trade,
right,
whether it was Bitcoin, whether it was DJT, whether it was Tesla. These were investments that people made on the basis that they assumed when Trump took office that they would take off. And actually, you've seen a huge pullback since then. I think you wrote it, but it's all three of those have been down double digits since the inauguration.
Yes.
And so kind of to your point is just the market can defy convention a lot of times, and what you think is going to happen doesn't always play out. So that's the only thing I would add to that.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, there's a reason we've pushed recording this podcast off, because typically we'll do it immediately following the close of a quarter. But we sit here today, April 14th, tomorrow's tax day. And to say it's been a surprising and interesting 14 days is an understatement. So let's get into this start of the second quarter. I think there's so much we can talk about. I think from the high level though, Zach, like we talked about off air, like, let's address, I think, the political side of this and how it cannot become a political conversation. We try not to make it political.
For sure, Tyler. Everything we say here, look, we're looking at the economy. We're trying to make the best possible allocation decisions as allocators of capital that we can.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate, in my view, that so many things today are politicized. And unfortunately, economics has become politicized in a way that I think is counterproductive to investors. I do think it is helpful to just talk about the facts, things that are true. And then there are also, economically speaking, some things that a small number may disagree with, but I think are generally accepted, and we'll get into that. But I'll throw a few stats at you stand out to me just to set the stage for the narrative behind the tariffs that maybe doesn't comport with reality so much. So the United States of America, we're 4% of the world's population, we're 26% of the world's GDP. So America is by far the wealthiest country. Economically, we have done extremely well. That is counter to a narrative of we're being taken advantage of all the time, raped and pillaged, like we heard recently. So let's compare the U.S. to other countries on a per capita GDP.
Okay.
So per person, how much a gross domestic product does an individual produce at various countries? United States, end of 23, $83,000. EU, $41,000.
Wow.
China, $13,000.
Wow. Mm.
So if China's taking advantage of us and getting rich, they're not doing a very good job of it.
Sure.
On a per capita basis. Mississippi is our poorest state in the union. Their per capita GDP is equivalent to that of the United Kingdom in Europe.
Okay.
A country we think of, I think, as generally wealthy.
It's an interesting comparison.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously we've come out with this idea of tariffs, although it's been stop and go. As you mentioned, Tyler, last week from relative to when we're recording this, we saw massive volatility around Trump kind of doubling down on the tariffs early in the week and then announcing the 90-day pause on Wednesday, where we saw markets up double digits in some cases, but 9, 10, 11% depending on the index you're looking at. To put that in perspective, the annual average return of the S&P over the last 100 years is about 10%.
Right.
So you saw almost a year's worth of returns in a single day, which we'll get into in a minute on kind of why that makes market timing so difficult. But I do want to share a great analogy that Morgan Housel had on his podcast recently. And he talked about tariffs generally, and he compared them to nutrition. And so there's no complete consensus on what the best diet is. You may talk to a nutritionist and they'll tell you, right, Atkins, high protein, low fat, there's Mediterranean, keto. There's all kinds of diets.
Yeah.
But I think all nutritionists would agree that refined sugars are bad for you.
Correct.
You shouldn't eat a lot of this,
right?
And Housel's point was tariffs are kind of like that. There's not a lot of debate around the fact that tariffs are generally a negative. They're generally not good economic policy. We saw I like the analogy that the reason we haven't tried them in the last 100 years is because anyone who lived through them realized how bad they were. Now we've kind of gotten past that and it seems like a good idea again. But the last time we tried this during the Great Depression, the Smoot-Hawley tariffs, almost every economist would agree, set us back even further, damaged the economy. So you can tell how I feel. I do not think this is a good policy. That's not to say that the Trump administration doesn't have other good policies that we would say economically make a lot of sense. But in this case, tariffs do not.
Yeah, Zach, that is such a great point, because I think it's so easy to just politicize this or make it about your guy or their guy. Yep. And at the end of the day, we are doing our best. And I think you guys as the investment team are doing your best to look at it from a investing lens, what's best for our clients lens, and a diversification lens. Like, get all this all molds together. So anyway, I wanted to at least address that before we got any further. But let's talk about these last 2 weeks. Like, what stuck out to you guys? What was, you talked about just the intraday move, Zach. Yeah. I mean, that was crazy. But what else stuck out as just a holy cow, I can't believe this?
Yeah, well, I'd say a couple things. I'll kick it to Sam and Austin to share their perspective. But one thing that, again, I feel really strongly about, and I think this market environment speaks to, is the value of diversification. And the fact that anyone is trying to predict anything right now kind of blows my mind. I mean, I understand that there's incentives, and if you have a million people predicting things, someone's going to get it right, and then they can make a career on that. But the reality is, when you know you have minute by minute news that can move the market by trillions of dollars, and it's largely dependent on the president at this point, like, trying to make that play the game of jumping in and out or anything like that is really value destructive. And again, we saw that on Wednesday of last week. You know, we gave a lot of it back Thursday. We're back up Friday. We're up again today. It's just, there's a lot of volatility right now. The great thing that I would tell our clients and others out there listening is you don't have to sell, right? Like, it's not fun to see the market go up and down as much, but sometimes inaction is the best action. For us here, what we're doing is we're doing what we tell people we'll do the minute they sign up with us. We're rebalancing to their asset allocation. We're tax loss harvesting. We're investing cash as it comes in. And we're doing the important financial planning work to show people that even amid the market volatility, if we do our job right and our clients do their job, they continue to save, work, and invest, then it's very likely their retirement plan is still on track.
Yeah. But Sam, Austin, what stuck out to you guys?
Yeah. I mean, as you're alluding to, there's kind of like two steps to maintaining a financial plan. And number one is building the portfolio and investing in it. And that's kind of what we do. That's the service we provide, the research our team has done. Step two is sticking to the plan, which is staying invested, the behavioral side of, you know, not trying to time the markets. And there's tons of data that we've seen, we've been reading, and Zach wrote about something I wanted to share. A study that BlackRock did, they found that over the last 20 years, 24 out of 25 of the best days in the market occurred within 1 month of the worst day. Yep. So another study showed that if you were to invest, let's say $1,000 into the S&P 500 over the last 25 years, if you were to exit the market every time you saw -2% or greater pullback or correction, if you were to make that exit and enter back in just a week later, every single time that happened, your $1,000 would grow to $2,582 versus if you were to stay in the market the whole time, come out with $4,183.
Put some dollar figures on it, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So it just goes to show again that you have to stay disciplined. You have to stick to your plan. And that's what comes after building the portfolio. We can do all the research and finding what's best and tracking indices as best as we can. But if you don't stick to the plan, you don't execute on that plan and you let emotions take over and exit at the wrong time, you can really damage the long-term return potential of your portfolio.
That's a great example. I appreciate you sharing that. Awesome. What about you?
I think just to kind of piggyback on that, the hindsight bias is a bias where you look back historically and you say, oh, it would have been easy to get out at the top and get back in at the bottom. And well, we should have known about this, or it was so obvious at the time, like you should have known what to do. Looking back at history. And so, but I think a lot of people apply that to then the current situation of, I want to try to time this current market and I want to sell now and I want to buy whenever it gets right at the bottom. And it's just something that is not feasible. And kind of what Zach was talking about is volatility. And there's a term in finance that we talk about. It's called volatility clustering. And it's where you have a long period of time, a very stable and kind of smaller returns. Maybe it's up, maybe it's down, but it's very narrow band of returns. And then you have these periods of time where, like Sam's point, you have large moves, you have large down moves, you have large up moves. And it's a lot of movement in a very compressed and small period of time. And so that's what makes it so difficult, though, to time the market, is you have these massive moves within such a short period of time that it makes it very difficult to kind of be able to sell at the top, buy at the bottom, which then comes back to staying invested just throughout that, putting cash to work when you have it available, rebalancing when you can rebalance, tax loss harvest and maintain that exposure at the same time. So you grab that loss, but you're not losing market exposure for any period of time because you just don't know when the next True Social tweet is going to come out, or I don't even know if they're tweets, but whenever the next post is going to come out saying this tariff is on, this tariff is off, and you see another 10% move in the market.
We've gone from a president who you rarely saw to a president who the market moves on comments made. And it's just fascinating. And we've talked about this, like information travels so fast that the market is just so prone to react to that news without even digesting it. I joked this morning, it's like the headline this morning and the headline just a week ago on a Monday morning are polar opposite headlines, you know, coming off the best week since, and you name the date. And then a week ago, it was coming off the worst week and you name the date. Anyway, it's just really, really interesting. You know, one thing that Daniel Crosby wrote, who friend of the pod, he put out a piece that I thought was incredible, but it basically was talking about the power of doing nothing. And it's so hard for humans to sit by and not do something. You want to do something. Even the clients I talked to that just knew we were rebalancing. Okay. Well, we do that every day. We as people and investors want to feel like we have some level of control. And I just, you've seen that. And I've been really proud of our clients, because I feel like we've really had clients that have behaved as a weird way, but they've behaved during this in a way that we would be proud of.
Yeah, no, I think that's right, Tyler. And I would say setting a plan ahead of any market volatility is so important, because you do it when everyone's calm and collected and you say, okay, what is this money supposed to do? What's the goal?
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to set an asset allocation based on that and all the other factors that we talked to the client about. And then, because it is so tempting when you see that first kind of punch in the face, right? Mm-hmm. As Mike Tyson, everyone's got a plan until you get punched in the face. That's when the plan actually becomes important, because it's so easy to want to deviate from that. Human nature tells us when we're threatened, we want to protect. And so we want to sell and we want to go to something safe. And human beings, the brain is not built to invest, right?
Right.
We have to overcome all of these behavioral biases, as Daniel Crosby does such a good job of pointing out. And the truth is, we do see them. We see them come out. We see them when people who were telling us the last few years, why do we own any international stocks? Who now go, maybe we should go all into international just to, you know, it's really interesting to watch that psychology play out. And, you know, we say this not as people who have all the answers, but I think I would say we have the humility to know we don't know. And therefore, the best strategy is to be diversified across many different asset classes, because that's the only way we can protect against one asset class really bringing down the entire ship, to use a nautical pun.
Exactly. As we always have to.
Yes.
What else stuck out to you guys? Maybe even just year to date.
Yeah. Well, one thing we haven't talked about, Tyler, is the behavior of interest rates. And like kind of not a lot of movement early in the year. We're kind of collecting our income and bond returns were positive. That was good. What we have seen since the tariffs got announced is a pretty big change. And there's been a lot of volatility there too. So the initial move in rates and in interest and yields, bond yields, was down for U.S. treasuries. And that is typically what you expect to see when there's market volatility, is there's a flight to safety phenomenon where people will sell stocks, they'll sell riskier assets, they'll move to what is has always been a safe haven asset, that's U.S. treasuries. What I think spooked a lot of people, including ultimately Howard Lutnick and Donald Trump, was that initial move down in yields reversed and actually yields went up, especially, you know, 10-year U.S. Treasury, 30-year U.S. Treasury, so longer-term yields. There's a lot of theories out there, and I don't think that even market participants have coalesced around any particular one. Foreign governments, for example, own a lot of U.S. Treasury bonds, and there is some fear that if China or other countries decide to retaliate by selling U.S. Treasury bonds, that raises yields, raises our borrowing costs. I don't think there's evidence of that yet.
Okay.
There's also something called the basis trade that hedge funds engage in that could have been responsible for some of the increase in yields. Regardless of the reason why, though, that was a concerning development, because if the idea is by putting on these tariffs, we're going to reduce our debt, reduce our deficit, increasing yields and increasing our borrowing costs when we're about to roll over trillions of dollars of U.S. debt is not a good thing. So I think that could have been a contributing factor to why they backed off tariffs, or at least put on a pause for now. The other kind of aspect of bond market investing that kind of came into play over the last couple of weeks is we did see credit spreads widen out some. So credit spread is how much it costs a company to borrow in relation to a comparable U.S. Treasury, which has historically been a risk-free rate. Right. So you might pay 100 basis points or 1% over a comparable U.S. Treasury.
Okay.
That would be a pretty tight spread. That would mean the market judges your company's debt as relatively low risk of default. We've seen those spreads widen out. That's something that we've been watching for a while, because spreads had gotten really, really tight. You weren't getting too much extra compensation for taking on corporate default risk.
Okay.
What the market is signaling there is they're judging that corporate debt has gotten somewhat more risky. And that means that the market's pricing in perhaps a greater risk of default in some cases. So that is going to have pretty big implications. I think it is too early to tell. Welcome, you know, Sam and Austin, if you guys disagree, but it's probably too early to tell at this point, because if tariffs are reversed, I do think there's still some chance that the economic damage to companies is not that significant. On the other hand, I mean, I think I saw a headline here locally, Simple Modern.
Oh yeah.
And Mike Beckham is post on LinkedIn. I think at one point it was 40 or 60 million that he was expecting to pay in tariffs. I think now it's over 100 million. And so not a publicly traded company, but obviously the same dynamics apply to Simple Modern, who I believe is getting a lot of their product from Asia, to other publicly traded companies. If you saw whether sales go down or they're canceling orders and they're having to reroute to other countries, that is all negative for earnings and for corporate stability in terms of being able to pay their debt. So that's something to keep an eye on going forward.
Question. What would you say to the people who say this time it's different versus historically people who've said this has been different in the past and it hasn't been different?
Yeah. I read a lot over the weekend. And I think if you look back in history, there have been times that look just as scary or scarier, if objectively speaking, you know, we didn't live through those things. It's kind of like the discussion around tariffs. We didn't live through the 1930s and right. the impact of what happened there. You and I didn't live through, you know, the late 60s and all the right. political turmoil around there, the assassinations that happened. There were, I think I saw the stat in the Wall Street Journal, I think it was the late 60s. There was something like 9 bombings a day in the United States one year. There were 4,000 bombings, politically related bombings around wow. the country. And like, we don't think of that because that wasn't part of our lived experience, right? But I think it does matter. We have to keep perspective. Ultimately, what I like fall back on is we're still a capitalist country. We get to participate in the greatest capitalist experiment ever, the U.S. stock market. People will find a way to make money. That doesn't mean, though, that in the short run, there can't be right. negative impacts from right. government decisions. I mean, it just is simply true. If you're going to put 10% tariffs on everybody in the world, that's going to get passed on to consumers in the United States. That's going to be inflationary. And to the extent we go much more aggressive as we have with China, one of our largest trading partners,
right.
that's going to be even more inflationary. What is challenging, you know, bringing back historical comparisons, Austin, you think about COVID, because some people have yep. compared this to COVID. In some ways, COVID was, you know, that was not something we chose. It was a global pandemic. In this case, we're choosing to kind of cause this issue. The other problem, I think, is during COVID, the Fed was able to step in, right. Congress was able to step in. So you had fiscal and monetary stimulus that was yeah. coming in a big way. What's much harder now
Fed, yeah.
is the Fed, right? Because rates are so much higher today. They are higher, though, because we saw a substantial bout of inflation. Mm-hmm. And so the Fed is not going to want to take rates back to zero the way they did during COVID, because it's very likely the tariffs are already inflationary. So on the one hand, you have pressure to keep rates higher to keep down inflation. On the other hand, if you saw tariffs impact employment, the Fed is going to feel like they need to cut rates to stimulate employment. So they're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah.
And then on the other hand, Congress, I do think with Republican control, there are some folks who are seriously looking at our debt and deficit and saying, this is unsustainable. We've got to cut. Doge, you know, for better or worse, is I think doing their job yeah. of reducing government yeah. expenses. But if that's the idea, that you're going to reduce the debt and deficit, then you're not going to come out with this massive stimulus package right. the way we did it during COVID.
One thing that's getting thrown around a lot is the word recession.
Mm-hmm.
I think you just laid it out perfectly. I think people hear tariffs made in the U.S., let's bring everything back here. But you just laid out what this all does affect, which is the bond market, the interest rates, and that local companies that are privately traded, local companies that are publicly traded, no matter what state you're in, those are the companies that are directly affected by this. And that is where I think those warnings about a recession or recessionary period are coming from, because it's not just we're slapping tariffs on. It's, right. it's the trickle down effect to everybody. Yep. Agree, disagree.
Yeah, I agree. I think what's hard about this, and I know it's going to be tempting for a lot of people out there to try to pick winners and losers. And I do think there will likely be winners and losers. The problem is, if, all right, we've set a 10% kind of minimum tariff for everybody, and now we're going to negotiate with all these countries. You know, you might find that, over the weekend we got, hey, we're going to exempt phones. Right. And then Trump said, well, maybe not so much, but yes, for now. Right. And so Apple's up today, but they're like, it does feel like tomorrow they could decide no. And then Apple's back down. As you go country by country, you know, depending on where publicly traded company supply chains are, it may be very good for them, or it may be very bad for them. We just don't know. Yeah. And I think that unless you've got a direct link into Donald Trump's brain, right. like picking winners and losers right now feels very dangerous to me. So again, I would go back to first principles of diversification really being the thing that we can cling on to for now. And then hopefully there is a, you know, stocks don't like uncertainty.
Yep. Right.
And uncertainty day is about as high as it's been in a long time, probably since COVID.
Yeah.
As we get more certainty, and I think this is maybe the positive spin you could put on this.
Mm-hmm.
Let's hope we've seen kind of the worst of the tariff uncertainty and it gets more and more certain from here.
It gets clarity.
And then we can build from there. And then, you know, to say something positive about what I think could happen with this administration, sure. the extension of the tax cuts from 2017, which were very, very positive. That's one of the reasons you saw great returns kind of in Trump's first term generally until we hit COVID and even through COVID, really. But that was a change. That was a reduction in tax rates, which translated directly to higher corporate earnings. It is going to be a positive if we can extend the tax sure. cuts or make them permanent. it's not going to increase the bottom line, though. It's just going to keep earnings where they are.
Right,
so again, positive, but not as
directly impactful.
Not as directly impactful when it comes to increasing corporate earnings as it was back in 2017. Yeah.
What else? We got a few minutes here. What else would you guys add as you look back on this?
Go ahead, just going to say, building off of that, I think you make this point a lot, and it's an excellent point. This goes back to the fact that prices convey information about the market. And so when you're thinking, you know, maybe it feels like there's a recession coming, it's impacting my business, it's impacting my friend's business, I'm seeing earning projections are low. Prices are baking in this uncertainty.
Yep.
Yeah.
The institutional investors in the market, they don't like to count on uncertain cash flows. And cash flow, that's where the prices of equities come from. So when you think about the stocks in the S&P 500,
right,
these market participants that have the billions of dollars invested, they're valuing these companies based on cash flow projections. And if they think that those cash flows are a little bit more uncertain, they could be up or down based on the tariffs, we're not really sure what the policy is going to come out to at the end of the day, they're going to value those lower, and they're going to assign a lower price to those companies. And that's why we're seeing these decreases in prices in the indices.
That's a great point, Sam. And I think one thing you're seeing right now is companies are actually pulling their earnings estimates. Publicly traded companies tend to guide analysts to, here's what we expect this quarter, and then earnings come out and they beat or they didn't, and most of the time they beat because they kind of manage them down. Right. And you know, there's a whole game that gets played. What you're seeing, and Delta, I think last week was one of them that just pulled their guidance all together, and they said, look, with tariff uncertainty, we don't feel confident enough to tell you what we expect our earnings to be. That alone creates some volatility. The other thing that I think kind of plays into that is, all right, when you think about where the S&P is at any given time, it is an earnings number times a multiple, right?
Yeah.
That's how we value the market. That multiple, as we've talked about many times, has increased over the last 15 years. And I mean, I remember early in my career, U.S. large cap stocks trading at 11 or 12 times earnings. We got up to double that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's just people paying more for a dollar of earnings. There's a reason why. It's because U.S. stocks generally have been more profitable and have been faster growing than other areas of the world. The question, I think, becomes, okay, if that statement is no longer true, if U.S. stocks aren't growing as fast, if they're not as profitable as they've been in the past because of tariffs or any other reason, then what is that multiple that we put on the market? Probably not 24 times anymore. Is it, you know, closer to a long-term average of 16 to 18? Well, okay, that has implications for where the S&P 500 is going to trade. And, you know, markets sometimes overshoot. So when I think about markets, and one reason that I don't have, I have plenty of behavioral biases, but volatility is not something that bothers me, because the way I think about stocks is there's a very wide range of reasonable prices for stocks. And that is maybe 15 times, given what I know today, to 25 times on the S&P. That's 10 turns. That is a massive range in what the S&P could potentially trade at.
Right.
And I'm fine buying it at kind of any of those levels, because I know over a long period of time, it kind of washes out. But people, you know, they anchor to that high watermark, whether it's their portfolio or the index level itself. And then they feel like they've lost the difference between that high watermark and where it's trading. And the reality is, you know, that's not a healthy mindset for an investor. You have to know that there are going to be periodic pullbacks that you just have to kind of, as Morgan Housel says, that's a fee for investing.
Exactly.
It's not a fine. You're not in trouble. It's just part of investing in public
markets.
It's
the price of admission.
It's the price of admission.
One thing that I think we try to do a really good job of, or one thing I think we strive to do every day with our clients, is convey confidence in our investing approach. So I think that's why having these conversations are so important, because you haven't seen us sway from a strategy we've felt strongly about, and now we're, oh, you know what? We're going to shift over here. We're going to pick stocks. That's not what we're going to do. And actually, I think there's people out there that if they pick value stocks, they've had their time in the sun, and then they'll have their time.
A long period, not in the sun.
Right. So I think the trust and confidence thing is the biggest piece I always try to get across to our clients is, and I think that's why we've seen so much good behavior. Again, I feel like I'm in preschool, but I've been so proud of watching our clients react or not even react at times to these swings, because they do have confidence. They understand what we do. Some of our newer clients don't quite understand yet. And so they'll get a grasp on it.
Yeah. I mean, just to agree with you there. That is why we put the plans in place, yeah. the processes in place ahead of time, because yeah. it is not trying to come up with a new plan in the middle of a crisis is not a good idea. Yeah. And we recognize that. So I do think clients are sometimes like, oh, what are we going to do? It's like, no, we plan for this.
We're doing
like
it,
we right know now. Markets are going to go up and down.
Yeah.
And we're going to do exactly what we told you we're going to
yeah.
do.
Any final thoughts, comments, projections for the rest of the year?
I think projections are tough. Like I said, my hope, and that's all it can really yeah. be, is that we've seen kind of the maximum uncertainty mm-hmm. when it comes to tariffs. And I was encouraged last week by some of even folks who are big Trump supporters coming out and encouraging him to reconsider the tariff policy. And I think that worked to the country's and the economy and the stock market's benefit.
Right.
So if that were the case, hopefully we steady out a little bit and can get back to just fundamental investing.
It'd be great.
It would be great.
Be great. Gentlemen, I really appreciate it. Thank you guys from all of the advisors here at Full Sail, from our clients. Thank you guys for what you do, watching the models, the day-to-day stuff you guys do. We could spend 30 minutes talking about that. I mean, the spreadsheets and the AI that you guys do, I mean, it's unbelievable. So I appreciate it. We thank you. If any of our listeners want a copy of our market update from a couple weeks ago, let me know. We'll be happy to get that to you guys. If you're listening to this in the podcast form, we will have this video available on our YouTube channel, and we'll send that link out most likely via email so you can find it there. But if there's anything we can do from you, if you want to sit down or have a call with the investment team, if you want to talk to your advisor, let us know. We'll get you to the right place. But we value and appreciate all the trust that our clients have put into us. We appreciate our network partners, our COIs, and everybody out there. So you guys have a great week. Let's hope it's just a calm week.
Cheers to that.
Gentlemen, I appreciate it. Thank you, guys. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed today's conversation, don't forget to review and subscribe to your preferred podcast platform. Have a great week. All opinions expressed by the host and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Full Sail Capital. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. Clients of Full Sail may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast.